Hello, listener. Welcome back. I'm your host, Dr. Beth Trammell, and I want to welcome you today to this conversation. I am here with one of my very favorite people. Denise, you really are one of my very favorite people.
Well, what a privilege, Beth, to hear that.
You really are. I mean, I know that we have worked together for what, I don't know, almost going on a decade, maybe not quite that long, but feels like it's been about that long. How are we going to say this? We're kind of like-minded in that we're trying to take over the world one teacher in training at a time, you know? So I am a licensed psychologist and an associate professor of psychology at IU East, where I'm the director of the Masters in Mental Health Counseling program. And Denise also works at IU East with me. So Denise, can you introduce yourself to listeners and then tell us one fun thing about you before we hop into this topic about our kids?
All right. Well, this is year 14 for me at IU East. I'm really grateful for that. I am an assistant clinical professor in the School of Education, focusing in elementary education. I'm also the coordinator of the early childhood programming here at IU East. So I'm grateful to be working with those who are training to be elementary teachers. And I love fun little things. I love turtles and jelly beans. Just in case you wonder, jelly beans, this is one of my favorite seasons because it's jelly beans. And I am an identical twin, which is just a fun thing. So, but jelly beans and turtles and cats and crocheting, you know, that's pretty much me.
I don't think I've ever met someone who says, I love jelly beans.
Oh, yeah. And usually you really love them or you don't like them at all. But
yeah. Does your twin love them too?
Well, I wouldn't say love. No.
So interesting.
I do give her my coconut flavored ones because, oh, that's gross.
Not coconut flavored. Okay. So do you do that? What is that like? There's like a special kind of game with jelly beans, right? Where like you're like testing whether it's, what's that game called? Do you know what it is? Where like there's two flavors that, or there's two jelly beans that look exactly alike, but one is like coconut and one is like dirty dishwater or something. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think I have heard of that. They do have some very interesting flavored, green apple or grass.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. They have the vomit flavored ones and all of that stuff. Yeah. No.
I know. So that would really be bad for a jelly bean lover.
That would be.
You would basically like be
an adventure.
You just don't want to do that. Okay. So there's listeners out there that know what game we're talking about and maybe they've played it or maybe their teenagers have. I mean, that's how I learned about it. 'Cause my teenagers and my nieces who are younger, they were playing this game in the car and it was so gross. So gross. Just thinking about like dead fish flavored jelly bean or something.
Oh, okay.
It's really terrible. Okay. Really anyway, terrible. Now moving on to our topic of day. So you and I both have a love for everything like teacher preparation, parent preparation, just helping to equip people who are raising or living or working with kids, right? We just want to equip them with as many tools as possible to help not just, with academic strategies, but just with overall like whole child kind of strategies. Mm-hmm. And so you were sharing with me something that you do with your teachers that I think, I just think it's great. So can you share just a little bit about the work you do with teachers and maybe some of the ways that you frame kind of the whole child approach that you do?
Sure. One of the first things that I teach my students is that the number one job of a teacher is to know yourself. You need to understand your own experiences, how it impacts that creates the lenses through which you look at life. And so I ask them sometimes these broad kinds of general questions to start getting them to dig deeper into who they are and how they look at life. And one of the questions I ask at the beginning of the semester for one of my classes is, just finish this prompt, a child is blank. And I think it's really important. We are teaching children. so we need to understand the lenses through which we look at what children are, and how it really does impact how we interact with them. Our own experiences of being a child, interacting with children, create this lens through which we see them. And we're going to have triggers for certain things, or we're going to have biases for certain things, and that's who we are. And we don't need to beat ourselves up for that. We need to recognize it and the impact that it has. So it creates these, and we revisit it throughout the semester. And I think that's applicable for whoever's interacting with children, a teacher, a parent, you know, bottom line, what do I believe about children? And then we can even say, so these children that I'm with right now, what do I believe about them? And it is part of the foundation that we build on throughout the semester of then what does that mean?
I love that. Okay, so what are some of the examples that your students come up with then that they fill in that blank?
Oh, I get so, it's so fascinating because some of them want to do the whole, they're just fun and energetic and, you know, and I'm not putting that down. I'm thinking through they're creative, they're intelligent, mm-hmm. they're capable, then I start going, if you think those things, then how are you reflecting that in how you interact with them in the classroom, after school, at practice? how are you setting it up, your interactions with them that continue to demonstrate that that's what you believe?
I love this. So I'm thinking about, ooh, man, it has been tough out there. In these classrooms, I spend a fair amount of time in a variety of different classrooms or interacting with teachers at all levels, pre-K to high school. And, you know, I started to think, okay, so if I asked parents or if I asked, if I asked parents, like, how would you fill in that blank? My child is. Right. So I think it's really interesting that you're specifically, you're asking teachers about what is a child, right? So what do we believe about children? I mean, I love this question because I can imagine if I don't start with this foundation that I do believe that children are creative, intelligent, capable, they want to have fun. They want to be learning. They are curious, right? Like, I have to believe that at the heart of a teacher's mind or a teacher's approach is threaded with some sort of positive word, right? Because if you come into this profession and you want to do this job, you typically like children, right? And so if you can have this frame of something that's more strength-based, I can imagine when you get to a certain point, either as a teacher or a parent, where you say, yeah, so I believe that all children are creative, capable, and intelligent, except for that one guy. I think about parents who are like, gosh, if I filled in the blank with my child is, it would be like, my child is a pain in the butt and they are a terrible listener and they never want to go to bed. Like, I can see losing sight of, oh, actually, your child is still creative, capable, and intelligent. We just kind of get lost in it, right? Like, well, I don't know. I'm just thinking about all these things around this one big question and how important that strength-based foundation must be. It must be.
Well, I think what you were describing, they're doing this or they're, were our behaviors. And we've got to part through all of that, right? And get to back to who they are, right? Because if I, in my own mirror reflection, if I were to say, if I were to describe my behaviors and think through, is that who I am? Now, I believe that there's a connection there. It's not that I think they're completely disconnected, but that goes to when I'm working with pre-service teachers, particularly, that the behavior is always telling a story. The behavior is communicating.
Yep.
And I do believe that if we can stay to the heart of if children are intelligent and capable, and right, then what's getting in the way of them not being that? Is it a skill that's missing? Is there a trauma that they haven't worked through, that so they don't have this, yeah, again, the skills of getting working through the trauma so that they can communicate what they need, or are they missing? Is there something in the way that's getting them to the next step? And we're human people who are going to go through, they 2-year-olds are not really good communicators, right? Well, they are, but they
not with their words.
Well, right. So people will say, oh, they don't communicate. Well, they actually do a pretty good job of communicating. It's just in a way that kind of grates on every nerve that we
have. That's right. Yes.
Right. So, and the same, so my, these first graders are doing this. Well, first of all, they're probably because they're acting like 6 and 7 year olds. And so what is it I'm expecting of them? Am I expecting them to act like a 6 and 7 year old? And if I am, then start there. I would really like you to work toward acting like a 7 or 8 or 9 year old. Okay, then how am I going to equip you to do that? Right. And knowing that at your heart, your behavior doesn't indicate that you're an awful person. It indicates that you're growing and you're messy and you're learning.
Yeah, I love this. And I recently did a talk in the community about challenging behavior through the lens of skill deficiency. So exactly what you're saying, right? So what we know about kids in development is that they have different areas of their life that develop at different rates, right? So play skills, communication skills, and that includes language and speech, but cognitive skills, physical skills, social emotional skills. So all of those skills are at various levels based on the types of experiences your kid has been exposed to, right? Yeah. So all kids develop, but it's just sort of at different rates and in different sort of buckets there. And so I think, especially for our really young people, I don't know if you're seeing this too, but I'm seeing that our really young people, our preschoolers, our kindergarten, first, second graders, because they missed a bigger proportion of their lives for those social opportunities and those play skill kind of deficiencies, we're just seeing so many deficiencies with social, play, emotional skills, because they spent a pretty big proportion of their lives locked, kind of in a house or afraid to go out, and they couldn't be around peers. And they just need so much time to learn those things when they're little. So, I've been talking with teachers too about when a child, quote, misbehaves, right? I love what you said. You said, what's getting in the way of them not being that capable, intelligent child? So what's getting in the way of that? And so what skills are they deficient in? Is it play skills? Is it social skills? Is it communication skills? Because when we look through the lens of skill deficiency, we can start to find a path forward saying, well, I know how to teach. I've just got to figure out which bucket, which skill are they deficient in? And then how do I teach that skill to this particular child that is having a hard time?
And understanding how all of the skills connect. And it's not just, oh, I need them to behave better, whatever better means, right? But that if they're communicating in a way, I'm angry or frustrated, or I don't feel capable, or There's something that's missing or in the way. And then I can figure out how to support them. Some of that is small successes in ways that they feel this, they identify as failure because they've had failure in their lives. So we've got to figure out how to change the title that they see themselves, that I make mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
Yeah.
And time I mess up, I'm human and learning is messy. And it should be expected that we're going to try and it's not going to go as we thought and we're going to try again. That should be the expectation instead of the, oh, we might mess up. Oh no. Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will mess up. And sometimes, right. And I think that the frustration tolerance is one of those that is just not encouraged enough. So then they get frustrated with themselves and they don't have patience with themselves and allow themselves to learn. So then academically, it's not just, oh, this is your social emotional, here's your, cognitive, and it's just all so woven together, and helping them understand the at the essence of us, if we can learn how to recognize what's happening in our bodies that's impacting our thinking, and use tools to support us in staying in a much more regulated, in our thinking brain kind of way place.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Then we are going to, if ultimately the goal is then to move forward academically and in all other areas, then we will, when we're supported in a way that we're in thinking correctly. So, yeah.
Okay. So I love this. So, I want to go back to something you said, and then I want to come back to this, like, body recognition, because I think that that's at the heart of, like, something really tangible that we can do as grownups with kids. So you're sort of talking about creating a culture of mistakes or culture of failure, essentially, right? Like, that we as grownups should be promoting. I mean, that's almost what I hear you saying. And I want to make sure that I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I hear you saying, like, we need to be promoting making mistakes and, promoting failure, meaning your kid's not going to get it right. And that's how they learn, right? They learn when they have messed it up and they figure it out.
Don't we all?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, here's the trick though, Denise. It is really inconvenient when my kid makes a mistake, particularly with Cheerios on the counter or on the floor, or, the milk when they're trying to pour their milk, or when they have decided they want to, try to do a new backflip off the couch. Like, when they make mistakes, it's really inconvenient for me. And clearly it's about me today. I don't know where this is coming from, but I just think about those, I think about two things that you said. One is, I mean, I fully agree that we need to be promoting, and then we as the grownups need to tolerate our discomfort when it's either messy or it's uncomfortable, because their frustration tolerance is low. Because this is the other thing you said. You said, like, their frustration tolerance, particularly for our younger people, is not great. And so it's frustrating when you're not great at doing something. And so there's a writing assignment that we're having them do, and writing is hard for them, and they keep messing up and they have to erase. And by golly, it takes them a half hour to erase it all. And you just want to just grab the darn eraser and just do the dang thing for them, So I think, because it's both uncomfortable for me to tolerate, a child's frustration, and it's also inconvenient for me because it either takes more time or it's messy or it's just, it's just easier to do it myself. Like, any ideas you have on helping us as grownups, either as a teacher or as a parent, like, how do I promote and create this culture of making mistakes, either in my classroom or in my living room?
I don't think I know, because of experience. I'll just tell you.
Yeah, I would love that.
One of the first things is to admit that you are a messy, mistake-making learner yourself.
I love it. A messy mistake making learner. I'm going to write that down.
Being transparent. As a teacher, I take risks and I work diligently at being transparent with the risks that I'm taking with my students.
Yeah.
And saying, you know, I tried this and guess what? It is not working. And in the midst, you were talking about that, you know, I can be frustrated. And I believe that it's okay for us as the grown up in the room to say that. We have to also admit that, you know, this experiment that you tried with the Cheerios in the milk is causing me some stress.
Yeah.
And it's because then it's going to, I'm already tired and now I'm going to, you know, have to clean up and right. Now, if they're a year old and you're ranting about it, I'm not sure. I think there is a place, though, as children grow and develop, for us to be transparent with that process of there can be two things going on at the same time. I can be supporting you and taking a risk and, you know, but know that sometimes I have to have boundaries too.
Yeah.
Sometimes as an adult that, you know, it's not a free for all. You can throw the, you know, I don't know why the Cheerios and the milk thing are coming out, but that's what we're doing right now. You know, but let's not just every time throw them on the floor and pour milk all over them and see what kind of mess we can make. Right. I think there has to be a balance there, whether that's at home with the Cheerios or in the classroom when you try to give students choices as to how they're going to express and demonstrate what they know. Or, you know, we try to motivate them by giving them choices and a voice. Autonomy is one of the key foundational things that I weave all the way through, especially my pre-service teacher with classroom environments. But there is a balance there. I believe that there needs to be balance and that there can need to be boundaries sometimes set. But I think it does start with us, first of all, admitting that we are, like I said, messy mistake making learners.
Yeah.
And that we learn a lot by trying. The risk taking is scary. And if we can develop positive relationships in a way that means I still care for who you are, even when you make me aggravated, even when I, you know, tired so that I feel like I've lost, you know, I you as a person, I still see you as a person as valuable and creative. And, you know, but at this very moment, you know, the other valuable creative person in the room is feeling stressed.
Yeah.
So I think that both things can happen. But I really believe that the ability, well, the perspective that the environment is a learning environment needs to be risk, you know, a risk-taking kind of thing is woven through how you interact with the people you're around, whether it's your, you know, children at home or the students in your room. I think it's built on safe relationships and watching you work at it together and watching how you're going to react the first time that the Cheerios and the milk happen. They're going to test it all the time too. We need to expect that. Are you still allowing me to take a risk? What if I take a risk this time? What if I try, right? They're going to test that all the time. Not expecting that we're going to be perfect at it the whole time. But again, we've got to be, oh, I messed up. Now, how can we work on that? But if I see a value in you as a person, then it's not, well, it goes back to some of the things that we've talked about before with restorative justice and those kinds I want it to be okay for both of us.
Yeah.
And I think so, yes, we make mistakes. I think that we need to be aware that there are going to be times where we need, that there will be consequences to the choices that we make. So I'm not saying the whole do whatever you want to that makes you feel happy thing either. But so it's just a journey together about those things.
Well, I love too, because this feels like it's bringing back what you said at the very beginning, right? That I could imagine, that part of the other way that I promote mistake making is to own my own stuff and not lose my stuff when mistakes happen, right? And sometimes I think that's the hardest part. It's just not having your immediate blow up reaction when mistakes happen. Because if you're having an immediate blow up reaction, you're not promoting mistakes in any way. And in fact, you're saying mistakes are not okay. Right. And so I think it comes back to what you said at the beginning, like you have to know yourself. And I talk about this a lot with both parents and teachers to realize, like, as you are doing some of this risk taking, right? And I want to clarify, and I want for you to make sure that I'm speaking fairly. Like when we're talking risk taking, we're saying like, hey, I'm going to trust you with the paint today.
Exactly. You know,
like tiny risks. I'm going to trust that you can use the scissors. I'm going to trust that when I have you, you know, write this sentence, you're going to be able to do it. It's something new, or maybe it's something slightly new and it's hard. That's the risk taking you're talking about. We're not talking about like jumping off bookshelves and stuff.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we're talking about the science experiment about sinking and floating all of, you know, and I'm going to trust you because we have this, because we understand each other and our purpose, we have a shared purpose in learning, that you're going to take some risks to try some things. And some of them are going to work and some of them are not. So definitely within boundaries of safety and I think clearly shared expectations.
Yes. Yep.
Not the teacher. I mean, you know, the teacher may listed the 10 rules and you're going to, you know,
yes.
I tell kids all the time. I went to school to be a teacher. I don't want to just walk around all day and make you follow rules, because that's not as learning. So let's share in the expectations of what it means to have an environment where we can try things, and then talk about it and try it again and revise it and learn together.
I love this. And I think that it's leading exactly where I think our, you know, one of our take home messages, I think, is that, you know, we as adults can do our best to try to be proactive, right? So if I'm going to do the experiment on sinking and floating, one of the things I should expect is water play. Like I should expect somebody's going to want to play with the water, or they're going to flick one another in the face, or they're going to rub it in their ears or whatever. Like I should be expecting or predicting that to happen. And so in my preparation for this risk-taking learning, right? This is what we're saying. Like my risk also should include preparation for my emotional reactions when someone flicks the water in my face.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, because that's fun. Like if I'm 7 or if I'm 15 and there's water in front of me, like I sure as heck am going to flick it in somebody's face, you know? So how can we either set the expectation? I love this idea of shared expectation. So before we all put our hands in the water, let's come up. Let's talk about what should we expect from one another here, right? Let's talk through what it is. This shouldn't extend the length of the activity by 20 minutes. This should extend the length of the activity by like 1 or 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it may shorten the length of the activity because you're more focused and you're not having to correct 6,000 behaviors or send somebody to the office or just feel like generally annoyed. And then you quit the whole activity anyway.
Well, to me, it goes back to one of the very hearts of what the role of a teacher. I talk with my students on very frequently about when you walk into a classroom, you can tell whose classroom it is.
Mm.
Is it Miss Teacher's classroom or is it everyone's classroom? I have seen, and it is beautiful, kindergarten classrooms where everyone had ownership. Now, please don't misunderstand that everybody's in charge and the kids are in charge.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean that everyone has respectfully has a voice and is given opportunities to have choices, and that they own that it's a learning environment in which all of them can contribute. What does it mean to be a contributing citizen of a learning community? Right. So then that teaches empathy and sympathy and all the talking about that. The basic, my actions and words impact somebody.
That's right.
And that it changes the learning community when I say or do something positive versus I say or do something that's not positive. And that it's a share, that's what I mean by shared power.
Yep.
That the power of the teacher is infused to me in all of the learners, that we all then have a right and a responsibility to learn together. I don't have a right to take somebody else's right to learn away from them. And what does that mean? Sometimes it means if I don't make you feel safe, if I don't make it feel like that you can take a risk, then I'm taking some of the power of your learning away.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's that shared. So when we're talking about risk taking, then We're all putting ourselves out there to be able to take risks and to learn together, and for learning to be messy. But we all can take responsibility for that in a village kind of way. And I mean that in the purest sense, that our actions and words impact others. And if we can learn that in what the children call their world, which is their classroom.
That's right, their class.
Their own life. Think about then the impact that's going to have then as the school, as their world gets bigger and they understand school and community and city and beyond that. And to me, I want to be hopeful about that. And I want my pre-service teachers and them to support by communicating with families, that can be possible when we all work at that together. And it doesn't need to be a separate code for school and at home, that we can agree that that's something that we would all want, and risk taking then at home. What does that look like, and how can parents and families and schools, teachers work together in teaching children about, you know, what is my body feeling when I, you know, when I'm starting to feel stress or anger, or, you know, because that's when we know that our, you know, we're going to go to this fight, flight, freeze kind of brain, the lizard brain part of our being.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're not going to be rational. We know that. So how can we support? You know, I shared with you that I've had my own personal journey with that, in such a real way, with anxiety over the last year, as I know millions have.
Yeah.
So how do we do that? You know, when I wake up in the morning with this knot of anxiety, because as a teacher, as a colleague, that's going to impact how I'm communicating. And I recognize that our, you know, closing into our world in our house for a couple of years impacted young people, but I'm seeing such a huge impact on all learners, you know, the college students who I work with and the pre-service teachers struggle with the social skills of working in groups in class.
Mm.
You know, and so I think that just recognizing that in all of us and understanding that if it's hard for us as adults and we have some skills of communicating, how much more challenging. So just like that, going back to the two-year-old who's having communicating by throwing themselves on the floor,
mm-hmm.
in our own social emotional way are seeing that in classrooms, at home, and we have to fight that in our own behavior. You know, hope that I don't throw myself on the floor too often, but I feel like inside that's what I'm doing, because it's a new, you know, this kind of anxiety is new for me. And recognizing it and knowing what to do, having worked through a lot of tools as an adult, I think, oh, I hope that I can teach these pre-service teachers who will support adults in teaching them to children. We just need tools.
No. And it feels like, the farther we get into this, you know, it does start with us, you know, and I know that that comes with a great sense of responsibility. And I think for some people, frustration, right? I mean, I've talked to plenty of folks that are like, I've done everything I can do as a grown up, and this child is just, you know, fill in the blank, you know? And while I know that there are some kids who really struggle, it all comes back to they are a full manifestation of their lived experiences, you know? And I tend not to jump on bandwagons or be on, you know, kind of jumping on the latest trend or fad, but I love that we have really started focusing more on a more trauma-informed response and understanding that what happened to you is so much more effective than thinking like, what's wrong with this kid? You know, like what happened to you really does send the message of, hey, what have your lived experiences been that tell you, child, that this is how you need to respond in this scenario to have your current needs met. So I love that we are starting to think about body regulation. I love that we as adults are starting to spend more time talking about how do we take care of ourselves so we can take care of other people. I love that there are people like you who are preaching knowing yourself and being transparent about our mistakes and having open communication and having restorative conversations. I'm just so thankful for the trickle effect that you are creating in the work you do with teachers. So I just, want to honor you in that, and that our next generations are going to be better because of the work you're doing. And so bravo to you.
Thank you. I strongly believe that if we can understand the power of the influence of the teaching profession, and in turn, we can translate that into the family unit for the grown-ups who were in the lives of the children, we can really reflect on the power that's wielded there.
Yeah.
And understanding the lenses through which we look at things impact how we even see that, you know, and that we can choose. It's not just a surrender to whatever happens, you know, that we consciously every day can make choices about that. And it doesn't have to start so big.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can see the situation as a big, overwhelming thing. But I, as I've taught my own children from a young age, we just do the next right thing.
Yeah.
We just have to choose. We have to be aware of what that next right thing is. And whether it's in the classroom or in our home, I think that it's choosing compassion, choosing to listen first, choosing to celebrate that difference can mean stronger, that in understanding ourselves, when we go back to that whole know who we are, there's going to be the good and the bad and the ugly of that, right?
I know. I've got some bad and ugly too, you know?
And that's all of us.
That's right.
And again, going back to then compassion. So let's just have some grace, right? Let's just play the grace card a little bit more frequently here in a true sense that of giving somebody an unexpected gift of compassion and understanding, and thinking about how far that would go instead of reacting in an angry way. React in a, I see you and you don't have to do this by yourself. It's going to be amazing. We're going to do it a little bit at a time.
One student, one teacher, one child at a time. I love it. Okay. I'm so grateful for you. And I'm so glad you said yes to coming on the show today. And I can't wait for us to come back together, because some of the things you were talking about, I was like, oh, there's our next episode. We have a whole episode of what, you know, how do we create this shared community of learners? How do we promote this? And how do we recognize and teach children to recognize our bodies? So there's so many things that we said today that I'm like, we could spend a lot more time talking about that. So thanks for saying yes to being here. I can't wait until our next time.
Thank you so much. What an honor.
Listener, thank you for being here. And until next time, make words matter for good.